please the Tuesday, February 16th, 2016 meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Today is the first in a series of informational hearings that we're going to be having. And today's is going to feature the gypsy moth. And before I call up our good friends from ODA, Mr. Roper, would you please kind of give us all a feel for what we have coming up here?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. On Thursday, we have informational sessions scheduled with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and we're going to hear from some researchers at OSU about their industrial hemp research. Next week, we've invited the Forest Service and BLM to join us, as well as the Department of Forestry to provide an update on sudden oak death. And then we're still waiting on bill referrals. We're anticipating one, possibly two bills coming to us.
Very good. Thank you. And committee members, should we receive any policy bills from the Senate? I'm sure you will be as delighted as I am to know that we will have one day likely to hear and pass out of committee any bills that we receive. So, with that, I'd like to call forward, please, Lisa Hansen and Helmuth Rog. And I'm going to open an informational session on the gypsy moth. Good morning to both of you. Thank you for being here bright and early.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. With me is Dr. Helmuth Rog. He is the director of our plant protection programs within ODA. We're going to visit with you a little bit about an invasive species that was identified last year in the Portland metro area, and we're moving forward with a plan for eradication and treatment this spring. So as many of you know, one of part of the mission of ODA is to protect Oregon from invasive plants and pests that can affect our economy as well as the ecology of Oregon. And in this case, that's really what we have with the gypsy moth find in the Portland metro area. So I'm going to let Dr. Rog go ahead and talk through the presentation, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions for you.
Chair, with Vice Chairs McLean and Krieger, members of the committee, good morning. For the records, I'm Helmuth Rog, Director of the Plant Protection and Conservation Programs area with Oregon Department of Agriculture. And I'm here today, thank you for the opportunity to the committee to present our work with the gypsy moth. As my director here mentioned, our mandated mission is to protect Oregon from invasive species. And today I'm showing you one of our legacy programs that we've done for 40 plus years to protect Oregon from the gypsy moth. So Asian gypsy moth is a different strain, and I will go into details. But let's go back quickly into the history of our program. As I said, we started about middle of the 70s with our gypsy moth program, putting out traps, and you see this graph shows the number of traps that we put out every year. You see a big number twice in the mid-80s. This was the largest gypsy moth infestation west of the Mississippi that we successfully eradicated here in Oregon in Lane County. And then we had another spike. This was an Asian gypsy moth infestation in the early 90s in Forest Park again. So on average, we're putting out about 15,000 traps every year across Oregon, mostly on the west side. That's where the high-risk areas are. So how many have we caught over the last 40 years? We started with two in 1979, and then we caught almost 20,000 in Lane County. That's triggered the largest eradication effort. And this, by the way, was the first time in the country that we used Bacillus thuringiensis, a biocontrol agent, to eradicate a gypsy moth population successfully, I want to stress. If you notice, over the last few years, we had very low numbers, 0, 1, 2, and 4, until last year when we caught 14 gypsy moth in Oregon. So we had a dry spell, and it definitely came to an end by last year. So how does that translate into eradication areas? As you see, the big block here where we sprayed up to 225,000 acres happened in Lane County in the mid-80s. And over the last 6 years, we didn't have any eradication at all here in Oregon. So this is how our program looks like when we put out traps. And you can see the red areas are the highest density for trapping. This reflects the high-risk areas where we have infestation risks of gypsy moth coming into the state. This has to do with import. This has to do with people moving into areas from infested states in eastern U.S. According to that risk, we're using a model, and we're using our 40-plus year experience to put out the traps strategically so we catch very early on any infestation in the state and can respond very quickly.
Mr. Rugg, I think Representative Whitsitt has a question or a comment.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair Whit.
No, Representative. I'm sorry to interrupt. This has just gone bias. Do these things ever show up in green? In green, the color green? Because about 2 years ago, we had hundreds of them. They were about this wide. They looked just like that, green velvet all over part of Klamath County.
So, Chair Witt, Representative Hildreth Witt said, you may refer to what we have, the tent caterpillar or the western caterpillar that we have. These guys show up and they make actually webbing on trees, and they can be very easily confused. They look very similar to the gypsy moth. They have these spikes on there.
These now, are the moths.
Yeah. Oh, the moth. Themselves.
Yeah, they have their green velvet with a pink color in the like interstitial spaces on them. And so, I have pictures of them. My mother took pictures of the patio is just covered it, but they're big moth and they look just like those.
All right, Chair Witt, Representative Witt said, if you could pass on these photos,
sure.
We definitely will be able to identify them.
Okay.
I have several lepidopterist specialists in our department.
Great.
They can definitely help you. But
not gypsy moth.
No.
Okay, thank you.
I hope not.
Rest easy now.
Get back in the house.
Yeah. Excuse me. So, thank you. So this looks, when we put out about 15,000 plus traps, and you can see the stars, these represent the positive catches. We have a center up in Portland, and we have down south in the Grants Pass area, another infestation of the European gypsy moth. We're not going to worry about this year. We will tackle it next year. And I'll get back to why we do that in a second. So what happened last year? We caught two Asian gypsy moth, one in Forest Park, one close to Terminal 4 in the St. Jones neighborhood. And we also found five European gypsy moth, two very close by the Asian gypsy moth. And we found seven European gypsy moth in the Grants Pass area. So we have to mention the catches from our colleagues in Washington, because they caught 10 Asian gypsy moth, mostly in the Tacoma area around the ports, but also one across our state line in the port of Vancouver. In addition, Washington Department of Agriculture caught 32 Asian gypsy moth, mostly in Capitol Hill in Seattle. So the number of Asian gypsy moth is unprecedented, the high number of Asian gypsy moth that we caught last year. Washington hasn't caught Asian gypsy moth in over 15 years, very similar to us. So something has changed, and we are responding to this threat. So what's the difference between European and Asian gypsy moth? And I think I passed out a little display of the moth.
Sorry.
All right. So the Asian strain comes obviously from Asia. And the big difference to the European strain is it's larger, the female, and it can fly. It is a very strong flyer, which increases the risk of spread very dramatically. The European, that's why I said the European population that we caught in Grants Pass, I'm not too concerned about it right now. They're not going far. We still have to find out where they are located to respond adequately by next year. But the Asian is a very high risk for us because of the increased dispersal ability. In addition, Asian gypsy moth feeds on a much larger range of hosts than the European strain. And it feeds on conifers. We know that. The European does as well if there's no other choice. We've seen that in Lane County, but it does feed on conifers. So this is the map of the populations that we found. The top one on your left is the representation of the gypsy moth caught in the Portland area. The lower left is the one in Grants Pass. And the one on the right is the map representing catches in Washington State. Again, unprecedented amount of Asian gypsy moth that we caught in Washington and Oregon last year. So what is the risk? We have an economic risk, we have an ecological risk, and we also have a human health risk associated with Asian gypsy moth infestation. First, to the economic cost, our nursery industry is number one, number two in the list of agricultural sectors, about $800 to $900 million a year in export. 85% of our nursery stock material is exported out of Oregon. If we export or when we export, we have to give a phytosanitary certificate. If we have an infestation of an invasive species such as gypsy moth, we have to take mitigation measures to make sure that the material is free of and can then go to overseas or other states, including California. The same with Christmas trees. Last year, we shipped 1 million trees to Mexico, for instance. We would have a hard time shipping Christmas trees into Mexico because gypsy moth is on their quarantine list. We would have to additionally treat the trees to make sure and comply with the Mexican quarantine rules. Forestry production, if we export hardwood and furs, this would be restricted. And all this translates, obviously, if we let the populations go into an increased pesticide use by the industry because they are forced to because of the quarantine restrictions that we face, and obviously by private landowners or forest owners. So just to give you a little, you probably know that better than I do, almost half of our land mass in Oregon is forested. We have a huge amount of conifer and hardwood species. Duck fir is the most dominant tree that we have in Oregon, with fir, maple, dogwood, and all these trees are hosts for the gypsy moth. So what's the big deal if we let gypsy moth run wild here in Oregon? If gypsy moth defoliates trees, it can change, and it will change. We've seen that in other parts of the country. It will change the temperatures of the soil and the water beneath the canopy of the forest. This has a dramatic impact on salmon, for instance, or water composition, soil composition. This will all be affected by the change of foliage if it goes away. In addition, if you have no foliage, birds that nest in trees are less protected against predators. How do we know that? We look to eastern states, such as Pennsylvania, where we have year after year defoliation, massive defoliation over hundreds of thousands of acres. This year, Pennsylvania will treat, for instance, 140,000 acres to protect the forest. They will just suppress. They will not eradicate. They will suppress the populations. So they only spray twice Bacillus thuringiensis. We do it three times because we want to eradicate the population. They are way beyond that stage. But they use that spray to mitigate the risk to the forest. And if you have several times defoliation of hardwood trees, the tree may die. There's also a competition to our native species. If you have massive amounts of caterpillars munching on the leaves, you will not leave leaves for our native species. You may know our state butterfly here is the one on the right, is the Oregon swallowtail. This may be impacted by the defoliation of gypsy moth. Human health. If you talk to people from eastern U.S., Pennsylvania in particular, you have a hard time in outbreak situations being outside because you got feces raining down on you when you walk outside in the park. Caterpillars shed 4 to 5 times, and the skin, the exuvia, drops on you, and people can get that in their eyes, on their skin, and it can cause a rash on your skin. It is very unpleasant to be outside. The caterpillars go even inside because they're all over your house. So last year, USDA APHIS, our counterpart with the federal government, installed a international technical working group, a scientific technical group, that studied both situations in Washington and Oregon and came up with a recommendation to aggressively combine our delimitation trapping program with a treatment in the areas where we caught Asian gypsy moth in Washington state and in Oregon to respond to that risk. So this is how it looks like. This is our proposed eradication area. It's about 8,600 acres. It comprises the part on your left side is the forest park. Then in the middle, that large park is St. John's neighborhood, including our international port T6 and T4. Hayden Island, and right across is the port of Vancouver, where we caught one gypsy moth over there.
Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious because Forest Park is heavily forested and fully intact in terms of being a natural area. Why you don't include the whole area of Forest Park? Is there a reason for that?
Representative Chair, with Representative Gorsuch, thank you for the question. This is a larger area than we suggested. What we usually do in response to an Asian gypsy moth infestation, we go 1 mile around a positive trap.
Okay.
So this year we had a very different scenario because we caught three within about a 4 mile distance. So we drew, this was in recommendation of the technical work group, we drew this eradication treatment block that you see right now. So it is not quite following our normal approach because we have a different system. In addition, in that block, we also caught two European gypsy moth. Excuse me. We also caught two European gypsy moth very close by, and they were included in that treatment area. That's why it looks the way it does. This is larger than we wanted it to be, of course, but this hopefully this treatment will cover all the risks that we expect from European and Asian gypsy moth in that area.
Follow up. So basically, we haven't seen it in the other parts of Forest Park yet, and this will cover the areas that we have seen it in.
Chair, with Representative Gorsuch, that is correct. Okay. We have not caught them anywhere else.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
So since this is the third largest gypsy moth eradication project in our history, we emphasized a lot on the communication. Our key message is that the threat is real, the time is now, and the solution that we have has been tested and it is effective. So we worked very closely with our CISTA agencies and also with Oregon Invasive Species Council. They helped us to set up a website specifically for gypsy moth. We are working with environmental groups, collaborating with local and statewide environmental groups. We just, and I gave you a copy of the mailing that we send out to 4,000 residents in the area. We have actually tomorrow night and on Saturday public open houses in the area to give the community the opportunity to ask questions, bring up their comments, and receive information about the program. We had workshops that we planned, and we're out there in the St. John's neighborhood. Actually, one of our federal counterparts lives in St. John's in the neighborhood, so he is very helpful to communicate with his neighborhood. And also, we are reaching out to the homeless community in the Forest Park and St. John's neighborhood to reach out to everybody. So this list is not too meant to be read, but it gives you a visual impression, the amount of people that we try to reach out from Oregon Department of Forestry, Oregon Health Authority, local groups, state groups. We're trying to communicate throughout everybody, be it an NGO or a state organization or a local organization like Metro. So this is a long, long list that we're communicating with. So what is the plan? We have completed the draft environmental assessment that is mandated by federal law, the EA. It is available on the website for everybody to look at and to comment to. We are working, thankfully, with Oregon Department of Forestry to helping us out with the heliport, the aerial operations, because they have the experience with it. We are working with the DEQ on the pesticide discharge management plan. And we're working with DAS and the Department of Justice on the BIT process to send out the aerial application treatment BIT. Oregon Health Authority is charged with the human health effects on the BTK, that's the Bacillus thuringiensis coursetucki. To answer any questions that the community may have, goes to the experts here, the medical experts. What will follow after the eradication, if we go through, we have to put out over 2,000 delimitation traps. That means we try to figure out how far they have spread. After we treat, and you can see the dots in the map represents a trap. So this is going to be a massive undertaking because we have to go through the forest park and hike through the forest park. We have to set up these 2,000 traps in a grid system to make sure that we don't miss anything. Our objective is to address the risk and to successfully eradicate the Asian gypsy moth in Oregon because of the potential risk to our economy and our ecology. And I'm just going to make that clear. If we don't do anything, we probably won't see anything in terms of damage next year, not the following year, but I can guarantee you in 5 years or 10 years, we will see a huge impact if we don't do anything today. And the reason that is because we see it in eastern U.S. where gypsy moth was not eradicated at the end of 1800, and we are still fighting the issue there. So the last page is, this is a truly cooperative effort to address the Asian gypsy moth risk in Oregon. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you very much.
So if I might add just a couple of things. I think one of the messages that Dr. Rogg really imparted on all of you is early detection and rapid response. That is one of the core principles of what we do at ODA in the Insect Pest Prevention and Management Program, as well as in our weed program. We want to find these things early when the populations are small and be able to go in, take care of them so that they don't grow. The cost of this eradication program, I realize you're not the financial committee, but I'll throw it out there, yes, so you have a sense for it, is over $2.2 million. USDA, APHIS, has agreed to pay for $1.7 million. That's about 76% of this eradication program. And we were in front of Ways and Means a week ago, and they will be. We have a proposal in for the other portion of it. This is actually 76% is very generous on the part of APHIS. Typically, what we've seen is about a 50% contribution from the federal government, and so we were incredibly pleased when our proposal was funded at a high level.
Committee members, this presentation has evoked a number of questions. I saw about half the committee raise their hands simultaneously. I'm going to work from my left to my right, right down the line, beginning with Representative Gorsuch.
My question was answered.
Okay, thank you. Representative Whitsitt.
So while you were talking, I looked up this moth that we saw in Klamath and then in Chemult last year. It's called a Pandorus sphinx moth. Mm-hmm. But they're about twice the size of those. But on the computer, it says that they eat copious amounts of foliage. And so I was wondering, how do they differ from the Asian gypsy moth, given that they're twice the size? And I mean, literally, the Chemult was just blanketed. I mean, the cars were driving over them and everything. So maybe you could talk about why the gypsy moth is worse than some of the other moths as far as defoliating things.
Chair, with Representative Whitsitt, Representative Esquivel had at the beginning a question also about the pine beetle. So the big difference between the Pandora moth and gypsy moth, the Pandora moth is a native species. And that's the same with the pine beetle. It's a native species. They can cause defoliation. And I worked as the grasshopper entomologist many, many years out there in Klamath County, and I saw the Pandora outbreak in 2005. They defoliate large areas one time, and then they disappear for many, many years again. Mm-hmm. So they have a cycle, the Pandora moth. They come every 7 years or so. 9 years, they come and go. Their population quickly rises, and then they become sick because when you have a high population, high density of caterpillars, they get diseased, and they within about a year or two, they're gone again. So in this case, if you have a very significant, I worked with the Forest Service down there. They show me aerial pictures of the defoliation. It's right. Very significant, right. But it only happens once in every 7-9 years. That's not a big deal for a tree, in particular a deciduous tree. They can easily tolerate that. But if you have with gypsy moth, year after year, populations, relatively high populations, and you have defoliations year after year, the tree will suffer significantly.
Thank you very much. Very helpful.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you. Several questions. One is impact of BT on the other insects. What are we dealing with there? That was a concern many years ago when I covered a lot of this.
So, Chair, with Representative Frederick, thank you for that question. That's a very important question. It's a very legitimate question to ask about the side effects of our treatment. So Bacillus thuringiensis, the variety that we're using is called Coustakii, is a biological agent that is naturally occurring as a soil bacterium, and is only affecting caterpillars of moth and butterflies. Mm-hmm. It does not affect anything else. We are concerned about bees, for instance. Even though there's no concern, we are still working with our beekeepers in the area just to make them aware. But the BTK does not affect anything else but caterpillars.
My concern was, frankly, about swallowtail. So,
Chair Witt, Representative Frederick, that is true. If we don't do anything about the gypsy moth, the effect will be permanent to the swallowtails. We are working with the EA and going into the area using Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife data about threatened and endangered species in the area. If there are, there aren't any in the Forest Park area, we would buffer the area and will not treat that area with BTK. We've done it, for instance, the last eradication that we had was in Eugene, where we had the blue fender issue in the area. And we buffered that area. We looked for the Kincaid lupin, which is the only host that butterfly eats. We located and buffered it and protected it. So in the case of if there's other caterpillars in the treatment areas, they could die depending on their phenology. Some of our butterflies hatch earlier or later and will not be affected even if we treat now in April. If they get hit by the BTK and die, we still have the opportunity within about a year or two that the natural invasion comes back into the treated area.
I understand. You did not mention the fact on another subject, you did not mention the fact that Smith and Bybee Lakes are Smith and Bybee Lakes are part of that treatment zone as well. Is there a concern? Is there an impact there at all?
Chair Witt, Representative Frederick, that's a good point. These areas are highly valuable, even though it was a landfill many years ago. But in that area, we have actually one T&D bird species, and I'm not an ornithologist, but I think it's a lark, some lark species that supposedly ground breeds there. Mm-hmm. So this area will not be treated, and that's not because of the BTK effect, but it's about the helicopter disturbance to the area. We also have in the entire treatment area 7 nests of the bald eagle, which is protected. We will buffer, and we're working obviously with Fish and Wildlife folks to they're already located, but we're putting that in the treatment area and buffer these areas.
And finally, one other question, one comment. The question is, have you already taken a look at what the cost might be for the grants pass treatment when you do need to do it next year?
Chair Witt, Representative Frederick, our department is stretched thin as is, so we're trying to focus on this risk right now, the Asian gypsy moth. The grants pass situation, as I said, can wait this year. We will still put out a lot of traps in that area to figure out where actually ground zero is. We haven't found it yet. When you look at our maps over the last 3 years when we found a gypsy moth down in the grants pass area, it seems like it's escaping us, going southwest. And so until we find the location, the right location, then we will draw the boundaries of the eradication, and then we go in there. And as it looks like right now, it probably will be larger than 640 acres. That means we will have to include U.S. Forest Service in the eradication efforts because they're then mandated to fund it, which is actually good for us.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to point out that on a regular basis, people ask me why somebody from the Portland area is interested in agricultural and natural resources issues. This is why.
There you go.
We are directly connected with the rest of the state in something just like this. Yeah. And so whenever that question comes up, that's why I'm most concerned about this. We don't need to have this kind of infestation attacking your trees or any place else. And we also know that in many cases it's coming in from outside by way of often by way of boats or other folks coming in. And we know that it's going to have an impact on the rest of the state, and the rest of the state's exports are coming out of that port as well. So this should never be a surprise. That's why I'm interested. Now, this is not officially in my legislative district. It is, however, in my proposed Senate district. Mm-hmm. So this would be this is a very important area, and the traps will be a good section of the traps will be in my legislative district. Mm-hmm. It is the most densely populated area. And the good news is that BT is successful. We have done it before. We have done it effectively without any repercussions on human health or other situations. People get annoyed by the helicopter, but beyond that, it's effective. So, just wanted to make that point.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger and Representative Gorsuch, I know you have another question, too. We're probably going to have to do a...
Yeah, it was actually just a comment on something
okay.
that was said.
Go ahead.
With all due respect, the area along Columbia Slough is actually natural, and Smith and Bybee Lakes are actually from long, long ago, pre-European settlement. It just so happens that the St. John's landfill was unwisely placed. So the lakes are extremely important.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I just wanted to make that one point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Krieger.
Thank you. What time of year would we find this thing in the different state life stages?
Vice Chair Krieger, thank you for the question. We have a model in place that will tell us fairly accurately when the gypsy moth will hatch. So what happened is we had females that laid egg masses that are in the display, and these eggs overwinter and then will hatch out as soon as they have accumulated enough temperature days, warm temperature, and this we are expecting probably about middle to the end of April, we will see them hatch out. So the timing of our eradication is very critical, and we do it three times over a distance of about 10 days in between each treatment to make sure we hit all the stages that hatch out. One of the challenges will be we have about 1,000 feet elevation difference between the high parts of the forest park and the Columbia. So that makes it a little challenging in terms of the timing. And in just to add on to Representative Frederick's comment, I haven't mentioned it yet. The product that we're using, the BTK, is actually approved for use in organic agriculture by OMRI, and I don't know what it stands for. It's an independent organization that certifies products for the use in organic agriculture.
Vice Chair McLean, did you have anything?
No, you guys have asked all the questions I was going to ask.
Representative Esquivel? Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. And I apologize if you answered this question while I stepped out for a moment, but moths know no boundaries and no state lines. So how coordinated is your effort with the state of Washington to make sure that we control this in a more global manner?
Chair Witt, Representative McEwen. So we are coordinating with the state of Washington in terms of the Vancouver eradication project, and we have a joint bid out so that we will be using the same service.
Great.
And really trying to integrate those. They'll deal with the population in Seattle through WSDA, but we've worked very hard to have it make sense.
Great.
So that it's integrated and complete at one time.
And follow up.
Please.
So that coordination at the federal level as well with those funds will also be coordinated with federal funds?
Yep. Representative McEwen. The funding is coordinated between federal government and us, so USDA APHIS is giving about $1.7 million to our counterparts, Washington State Department, and $1.7 million to us, and we just received it last week. Actually, our counterparts with the State Department of Ag in Washington are very happy that we are taking over that chunk here at Port of Vancouver because they are very busy with the areas in Tacoma. They have seven areas that they have to treat this year. So they are up to their eyeballs with treatment areas, and they asked us before, and we coordinated that. So the reason we are actually agreeing to do that is actually because this is pretty much also the source. We haven't talked about where is the Asian gypsy moth coming from.
Those darn ports, I'm guessing.
Yes, we are receiving steel plates from Far East Russia. And over the last few years, we've seen that the Asian gypsy moth females lay eggs on the steel plates. So our counterparts from Custom Border Patrol, CBP, have to inspect every single steel plate. The steel plate is about this size here, this thick, weighs about 1,500 tons. something. It's really heavy.
100 tons.
And there are 1,000 per vessel in there.
That's a big
crane. We have helped them to inspect every single steel plate to look for egg masses. You can imagine how tedious or how hard that work is. But that's the risk. With the closure of Terminal 6, the steel moved over to Port of Vancouver. Now it gets unloaded in Vancouver, trucked over the bridge I-5 back into Portland, and it's close to Terminal 4, where there is, what do you call that, a smelter, where they melt down the steel and make pipes out of it. Mm-hmm. That's very likely the infestation, and that's why we said this is not a single infestation that we catch. We have a pathway that we have identified.
Okay. Thank you. That's very, very helpful.
Representative Barreto, did you have anything?
Not really. When they melt down that steel, that should kill the moth, shouldn't it? when they come in on the steel, is it in egg form then, or is it in the caterpillar stage? Or
Representative Chair, Representative Barreto, we can find the egg mass. So the female in the ports over there, and you have to see the picture sometimes. You can't see the paint on the vessels because it's completely covered by female Asian gypsy moth in the ports in Russia. We have photos from our CPP folks. They go over there. So every female can lay up to 1,000 eggs in these egg masses, and they lay them up on the steel plate. We look for it. If we find them, we scrape them off, but it's sometimes really difficult to get to them because these steel plates are large and they're heavy, and they're about put away this far, so you can't really reach underneath. And sometimes if we scrape them off, part of it may still be on there, and during the transport, it gets blown off, and then it lands somewhere where the eggs can hatch out, and then a population can establish. If they stay on there, and we had actually, excuse me, if they stay on there, and we had an agreement with APHIS, actually, because they are controlling the international import, that the steel plates have to go as soon as possible into the factory and get melted down. Just do what you said, minimize the risk.
Can I have a follow-up on that?
Please.
You know, when we build a product, too, that we ship overseas, and it used to be if we didn't use kiln-dried lumber in our crating processes, then we needed to fumigate those before or inside the container before they shipped. Is there any fumigation process that they use when they're shipping the steel like this?
Chair Witt, Representative Barreto, we've done that, or our federal counterpart, USDA APHIS, has done that in a case where we found a lot of egg masses. But with steel plates, it's very impractical. We don't have enough methyl bromide in this world to do the treatment that is required to do that. These steel plates are immense, and we have to treat them over 1,000. We've done treatments with, what are these called, the steel I-beams, I guess they're called.
I-beam.
The I-beams, right. I found an egg mass on an I-beam, so what we did is we covered the I-beams up and fumigated it. That's much easier to do because they are very small beams, relatively small beams, compared to these large steel plates, so it's almost impractical to do that. We worked with USDA APHIS to do mitigation on offshore, what we call, to minimize that these steel plates come infested over here. And so they're putting out different lights on the ship, yellow lights that is not as attractive to the females. They are trying to keep it in a short time, not in the time when these Asian ships must fly. The other issue that we've seen this last year, petroleum was so cheap in Russia. So all the vessels, even they didn't pick anything up in Russian ports, they bunkered diesel. Mm-hmm. And in that state, even though this is about a mile or 2 miles offshore, the gypsy moth was out there and infested any vessel that came by and bunkered diesel. So the risk was very high for the entire West Coast. That's why we've seen, obviously, also in Washington, issues.
Thank you. Vice Chair Krieger.
I now know that they emerge in April, but I don't know for how long they're in a caterpillar stage and when they turn, how long do they remain in the moth stage?
Chair, Vice Chair Krieger, sorry for that, I didn't finish. So they have about 4 weeks development in the larval stage. Then they go into about 2-3 weeks, all depending on the temperature, into the pupae, the chrysalis stage. And then the moth usually hatches out around August, in depending on the altitudinal effect that we see in Forest Park. So last year was very interesting because we had a very warm year. We caught, and I have to get maybe very early, even in June, end of June, we caught the first gypsy moth in Oregon last year, which was a record for us. So this is indicating insects are very sensitive to temperature changes.
The maps that you showed, I think, suggested that very strongly that areas of infestation, Puget Sound, Southwest Washington, Portland, was industrial port facilities potentially. If steel is the pathway, would that have been the pathway for, say, Eugene and Medford as well?
Chair Witt, in the case of Eugene, we had a European gypsy moth, so it wasn't an Asian gypsy moth. So this came in very likely with somebody moving from infested areas like Pennsylvania or vacationing from Oregon in Pennsylvania. We've seen that in another area down in the Grants Pass area a few years ago where people took their RV over to Pennsylvania and brought the gypsy moth back on the RV because the female dropped on it and put their egg masses on there. And we actually had the first eBay transmission of gypsy moth in Bent in 2006.
eBay?
One of our trappers was like a Sherlock Holmes, went around the neighborhood trying to find the source, and he found somebody who bought a 65 Chevy, something like this, on eBay from Pennsylvania. When we looked at the car was plastered in gypsy moth egg masses. So that's how we get European gypsy moth from infested areas in eastern U.S.
That's amazing. I noticed that early on in your presentation that you mentioned that Mexico would ban the importation of Oregon's Christmas trees. Should our infestation get to a point where we couldn't certify them moth-proof? I just find it a contradiction that we have other countries banning our products, and yet we seem incapable of controlling vectors that introduce this major pest into our country, and it just seems that we need to find a better way to be able to handle our imports. And I know that that is overly simplistic concept, but nonetheless, it is still exceedingly troubling that that this occurs.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to take a high level stab at this, and then I'll ask Dr. Rogg to help me out. I think one of the things that we see when you look at international trade are what we call phytosanitary barriers. And it may be as much as a country just trying to protect their own market by putting up a protectionistic quarantine for a pest. And there are multitudes of different ways we see that. Mexico, for Christmas trees, is a very challenging market in terms of they're trying to protect their native market, and getting trees into Mexico, I think Dr. Rugg can speak to, is incredibly challenging in terms of what they do for their inspection and their sensitivity for any pests. That doesn't answer your question about Oregon or the U.S. protecting it, but I wanted to overlay that international trade piece that we deal with very often.
So, Chair Witt, I have to be careful what I say here, because our federal government pays about 50% of our insect program's bill. So, but we are sometimes at odds with them because of the way that we think they should be more restrictive, as you say. As you mentioned, in terms of what they let into the country. But I can guarantee you, being out there with our CBP folks, which are the frontline guys, these guys do an incredible job, in particular here in Oregon. We have very close relationships. But then it's obviously all about politics. And as my director here mentioned, I've worked with Mexico in particular since I have 12 years of South America experience. I worked with them on a personal level, and we were actually able to get several pests of quarantine concern for Mexico off their list, which helped our Christmas tree industry to ship easier into Mexico. So it's sometimes it's a hard work. We have to work with them. We have to evaluate. We have the expertise in our department to make sometimes the call what is a quarantine pest for them or not, and so so far it has worked out really well.
So could we compare and contrast, is this, have we had the same kind of pathway, introduction, vector, whatever? Has the port of Vancouver, B.C. experienced similar problems?
Chair Witt, yes, so this is a reoccurring issue, and sorry, we have to wrap it up, I guess.
Yes.
You point to is well taken. This is a very serious issue, and we have looked at it. However, now we haven't had any Asian gypsy moth in over 15 years. So both states, Washington and Oregon, are still analyzing what has happened last year. Was there a breakdown on the CBP side, on APHIS side, or what has happened? Because it is an unprecedented issue that we've seen last year, so we're still working on that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might, I just want to make one more kind of plug for our plant pest program. One of the really important roles that we play is in terms of being able to maintain pest-free status in the international markets, not only for our nursery industry, but you can think about it in terms of livestock as well, for animal diseases and others. And Oregon has a very strong reputation for that, and we work very hard in terms of our early detection rapid response work to maintain that, to keep markets open for Oregon agricultural products.
Vice Chair McLean.
No, I've got to go. I'm so
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. So are there lessons possibly to be learned? Is Vancouver controlling the problem better than the United States is?
Chair, you refer to Vancouver in Washington?
Vancouver, British Columbia.
British Columbia. No, they are facing the same issues. And then sometimes we have the concern that we're going to get pests from British Columbia into Washington and Oregon as well.
All right.
So same issue. They are spraying as well. They are treating. They're very proactive as well, trying to protect Canada and obviously subsequently the U.S.,
Thank you both very, very much for alerting us to this very significant problem and for keeping us updated on developments. And should you think it appropriate at a future time for another update, we would be very open and welcoming of that.
Chair, we thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very, very much. With that, I'm going to close today's informational session, and we are adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Session, and we are adjourned.